Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get right in here because this is a very interesting topic that we've lined up today. And it is it's a tax topic, but it's also a practical topic. It's a real estate topic. And where do taxes and real estate meet? Well, one of the places they meet is in this thing called a 1031 exchange. What is it? How does it work? What are the practicalities? How do I do it? How do I make sure I don't mess it up? That's the big question. All right, so we brought in the big guns. We've got Jaina Perrett on the line with us. And I ran across Jaina. I think I saw her on LinkedIn or maybe in a trade publication or, you know, I have to confess, Jaina, I don't remember. I think it was LinkedIn. Jaina is Vice President and Regional Manager of First American Exchange Company. And their company specializes in this area. So, Jaina, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, David. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I'm excited because this is an area where a lot of people, they hear about it, they kind of know, or they heard of somebody that's done it. They may or may not work with a CPA or a tax professional. And so there's, you know, it's an area, of lack of knowledge. And that's where somebody like you and your company can come in and help. So if you would, let's do a couple of things. Let's get some basic things out of the way. First, let's talk about your company. So we can, it's always good to understand where people are coming from when we talk about these things. First American Exchange Company. Who are you? What do you guys do? And how do you get involved with the 1031 exchange process?
First American Exchange Company is a leading national provider of 1031 exchange services. We serve as the qualified intermediary, and we handle all the documentation for the exchange as well as hold the funds in between the client's sale and purchase of their new property. We also handle forward exchanges, reverse exchanges, improvement exchanges, and personal property exchanges.
Okay, so you make sure it gets done right because you make sure that the money is all done properly so that you have the ability to control the transaction. And we'll get into some details, but that's very attractive because there are time periods and there are special rules that need to be followed. So for our listeners, Jaina, let's break it down a little bit. What is a 1031 exchange?
Well, a 1031 exchange allows an investor to sell an investment property and acquire a like-kind property, which includes both real estate or personal property exchanges, and it allows them to defer the payment of federal and state capital gains taxes.
Okay, that's an important distinction. Defer, not eliminate. So it's still out there and may need to be paid in the future.
That's correct. It doesn't eliminate the tax. It just defers the payment of the tax until later when the client will eventually cash out of their investment.
The only exception I know is if you, for income tax purposes, is if you it's part of your you die with it as part of your estate, then there could be a step up in basis depending on the property and you know how you've configured your estate plans, and that's beyond the subject today. But so the taxes we're talking about, Jaina, then we're talking about, as I said, it's not the you know getting into the estate tax. We're talking about capital gains taxes, things like that.
That's right. The taxes that are ordinarily due when someone sells a capital investment, such as real estate, would be capital gain taxes, whether it's short-term or long-term gain, and depreciation recapture, which a lot of people don't realize. If they've owned a property for a long time and have been taking depreciation deductions over the years of ownership, when they go to sell that property, the depreciation tax is due, which can really add up, as well as state taxes. So there are lots of different types of taxes that would be potentially deferred by doing the 1031 exchange.
That's very good. And these taxes are significant. You know, you mentioned the recapture of depreciation, and hopefully we didn't put anybody to sleep saying those two words together because that is kind of technical, but these taxes are very specific, and the depreciation recapture, you know, if somebody's written off the building, as you said, or whatever it is, and, you know, when they sell it, if they sell it outright, they've got to bring that back in, and they've got to consider that income, and that could be taxed at a higher rate than their capital gains tax.
That's right. Actually, depreciation is taxed, or is recaptured, if you will, at 25% of whatever depreciation was taken over their term of ownership. So if somebody owned a property a long time and, say, is depreciated, written off and depreciated $100,000, then when they sell that property, 25% of that $100,000 or $25,000 will have to be paid back.
Mm.
And it's a flat rate, regardless of what income tax bracket you're in, for that particular rate. So you're right. It could be more than the actual capital gain tax itself.
That's significant. That's very significant. So let's walk through an example so people can get a feel for this and why they might want to think about a 1031 exchange. Maybe walk through an example with us, Jane, if you would. Maybe somebody who's an investor acquiring property and then they sell it at a later point.
Okay, sure. Let's go over a hypothetical situation. So let's say we have an investor who acquired a property for $250,000 11 years ago. It's a rental property. The investor has taken $100,000 of depreciation over their term of ownership and is now selling the property for, say, $350,000.
Okay.
So if she sells, she's going to pay $25,000 in depreciation recapture tax, plus potentially another $20,000 in long-term federal capital gains tax, plus any applicable state taxes that might be due, dependent upon where the property is located. So that's probably a minimum of $45,000 in taxes that she would be looking at when she sells that property. So she sells for $350,000 and has to pay $45,000 in taxes, she's left with $305,000 after paying the taxes.
Mm. Okay, so it's better than a sharp stick in the eye, but it's still not fun to pay the tax.
Right. But if she did an exchange, those taxes would be deferred so that she'd have full use of her equity from the sale without offset for taxes, and then she can leverage that $45,000 that she saved in taxes into acquiring $180,000 more of a worth of replacement property, assuming she uses a 25% down payment. So it's a definitely way to accumulate greater assets, higher valued assets, and she can use that. You know, those assets might generate a higher cash flow, and she can use that cash flow to pay for things like college, for her children, vacations, anything else that she might like.
You know, it makes a lot of sense. A lot of business people look at this, and I think the thing that people may not realize is this is something that a lot of people can take a look at and should consider when they are working with real estate and the various different investments they may do. So here's my question for you, Jana, and we'll get to this, and then we'll grab a break. But I want to get to this before, you know, the question is, how do you go about doing this? I mean, do you say, okay, I want to sell this property, I'm going to buy that one and go ahead and do it and then file a form that says you're going to make it an exchange? Or how do you start the process?
Well, David, that's a great question, and it's something that I like to get out there and a lot of people don't know about, is that they do have to contact an experienced professional that serves as a qualified intermediary before they sell their property. Because there are certain documents that need to be prepared and signed. And as I said, the sale proceeds have to be held by the qualified intermediary and cannot be in possession of the investor at any point, or it's taxable. So very important to contact a qualified intermediary before the sale. Once the sale is done and the exchange had, you know, if it wasn't set up, then it's going to be too late to receive the tax deferral benefits of a 1031 exchange.
So there's no cure there. You can't say to the IRS, you know, we really didn't mean to do this as a 1031 exchange. Do you have a form for that I can send in and say, I'm sorry, I'm going to file a 1040X and we're going to amend my return, right?
That's right.
I can't do that.
You just can't. And I hate to get those phone calls when somebody tells me they've just sold property and want to do a 1031 exchange.
Yeah. Yeah. If you could do that, Jana, I tell you what, you'd really have something, right? Talk about a special 1031X, we'll call it, right? Those don't exist.
They don't, unfortunately. You have to get that intermediary involved before the sale.
Very good. If you're just joining us, Jana Peretta is on the line with us. She's Vice President and Regional Manager of First American Exchange Company. We're talking about 1031 exchanges. We'll grab a quick break. We'll be right back with Jana. Stay right there.
What if in the time it takes to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? If you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? There is no cost or obligation to meet with David. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com for more information.
And welcome back. Have we convinced you that a 1031 exchange is right or worth consideration? Well, let's continue. Jana Perrette is on the line with me, Vice President and Regional Manager of First American Exchange Company. And this is, hey, this is what they do. They help people do these 1031 exchanges correctly, acting in that intermediary capacity to make sure you're doing this correctly. So let's dig in a little more detail, Jane, if we could. What qualifies as a 1031 exchange? What type of property are we talking about?
Well, it has to be investment use property. But any type of real estate can be exchanged for any other type of investment real estate. So, for example, you could exchange a residential rental property for commercial, a duplex for a vacant lot. Anything that is considered real property under state law qualifies and can be exchanged for any other kind of investment real estate. Very broad.
Okay, it's very broad, but we're not talking about our primary residence, though, are we?
That's right. 1031 exchanges do not work for primary residence on either side of the exchange. You cannot sell your primary residence and exchange it for investment property or vice versa.
And then vacation homes, things like that, they've got to be rental homes or rental property, right?
Generally.
Okay.
There is some permitted limited personal use for a vacation home that is set up by a safe harbor that the IRS came up with in 2008. So if you have, for example, a condo on the Gulf Coast, you could rent it out some of the time initially and use it for some limited period and still have it qualify as investment use property, which is eligible for exchanging into or out of.
Okay, that makes sense. And with the exchange, and we'll come back to this intermediary role that your company takes or that any other intermediary would take, where the transaction is structured, the sale occurs, And because you've got these things put in place to begin with, then the funds, they are held for the benefit of the seller. And then where are they held? You hold them at your exchange company?
We actually set up segregated bank deposit accounts under each taxpayer's name and ID number. So each person's funds are held in a segregated bank account.
So you still need to have the closing done, but the difference here is the check is going to that account that you've described, held by your exchange company to keep it segregated and not in the hands, per se, of the seller.
That's right. The seller can never be in receipt of the funds, not even constructive receipt. So they can't be deemed to be in receipt or control of the funds. They have to come straight from the title company or closing attorney's account into the exchange company's account.
Okay, and so here's the obvious question that somebody's got in their mind right now, Jana, is, well, how secure are the funds if you're in control of them, if a company like yours is holding the money?
Well, that's a good question and something I suggest every investor investigate before determining who they're going to entrust to handle their exchange and hold their funds. But generally speaking, it's best to find a company that has extensive experience with 1031 exchanges and is backed by stable financial institutions. First American takes significant steps to provide financial security to its clients. For example, the client's funds are held only in segregated accounts, bank deposit accounts that are open under the client's name, and those accounts are FDIC insured up to $250,000.
Very good. Yeah, if you're going to do this, you want to make sure, there's a lot at stake here. We'll make sure we get it right. And now, let's talk about this, because this is another area where people get tripped up, Jane, and it's the area of time frames. Walk us through the time frames. Well, let's say I want to sell, I've got it listed, I've got buyers that are, talking to the listing agent, and we're talking turkey, and walk me through some of my timetables for wanting to identify another property or be prepared for what needs to happen with the exchange.
Okay. There's two deadlines in the exchange process. I really like to say there's three because First of all, the exchange does have to be set up before the sale. So that's number one. From the sale date, the client's going to have 180 days to acquire replacement properties, but they have to identify the potential properties that they might purchase within the first 45 days following the sale closing. It's a very limited time frame to pick out what they might buy in 180 days to close.
Okay, so here's the question on that. The identification, is that just a matter of how do you document that? Is that you write note to self, put it in my calendar, or is that part of the communication, some sort of form or something that they would send to a company like yours saying, I've identified my property, here's the address, so that there's a clear identification within that window?
Good question. As a qualified intermediary, we do send out a form that the client can use to complete its identification. It has to unambiguously identify the property. So if it's a building, they can use a street address, city, and state. But if it's raw land, they're going to have to use some other means to specifically describe that property, such as by attaching a legal description or something that can pinpoint exactly what they're targeting to purchase. And they have to send that in to the qualified intermediary within the 45-day period.
Okay,
so follow up and collect those.
Yeah, that's very good. So I can't just say, hey, I'm going to get a condo over on the beach. That's not sufficient specificity.
No, that's right. Even down to the specific condo unit would to be identified.
So when we say identify, we mean, we're talking about precision, the specific piece of property.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Well, that's important because I think that people aren't always clear on that. Now, here's another common question I know that people have because I've heard this and people ask about it is how much, if you're trying to defer all the gains and not have any, we don't want to recognize any taxes before we have to, how much does the next property need to be? I mean, do we need to be, just enough to the property need to be worth what the gain is or equal in value? How does that work?
And that's a good question. And there are many misconceptions about this. Some people think all you need to do is roll over the equity that you have from your sale.
Right.
Some people think all you need to do is reinvest the gain. But the rule is, and it's a simple rule, in order to have a fully tax-deferred exchange and not have to pay any capital gain taxes, the investor needs to trade equal or up in value and equity.
Hmm. Okay, well, right there, okay, because that's an excellent point to tag this next one to, the relationship or the involvement of debt. So if the property you're selling has debt, how does that factor into the exchange?
Well, the debt is, of course, required to be paid out when mm-hmm. they sell their property.
Okay.
And the equity is what's sent to the qualified intermediary.
Okay.
So the investor is going to need to be able to reborrow that debt that was paid off when they sold their current property and replace that debt in an equal or greater amount. But it's important that they not overborrow because they also want to make sure that they use up all of the equity from
right.
the sale to acquire their replacement property.
So if they then decide in the next transaction, say, okay, I'm selling the one I got. I've got some debt on it. I've got these gains. I'm going to identify the property. I close within 180 days. I use an experienced intermediary, and everything's all good. But you know what? I don't want debt on the next one. I've actually got some extra cash I want to invest. If they inject that into the equation, that can trigger the taxes?
Yes, thank you for making that point, because that is true. If someone doesn't want to carry debt forward on the replacement property and they have extra cash lying around, then they can replace that debt that was paid off with fresh cash out of pocket. So again, it goes back to the simple rule, trade equal or up in value and equity.
Okay.
However they get there, as long as those two things are accomplished, they'll be able to have a fully tax-deferred exchange.
It makes sense to me, Jana. I think it's a lot of good stuff, and I'm glad to clarify as much as we can on this program for our listeners. Let's grab another quick break. We'll come back with Jana Perrette and continue our conversation on more details on 1031 exchanges. Stay right there.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland.
And we are back. All right. So taxes. Taxes are the next question. Well, taxes are the question for this whole thing. Jaina, we're talking about 1031 exchanges with Jaina Pratt. I was thinking the next question I want to make sure I got to with Jaina. She is joining us from First American Exchange Company, Vice President and Regional Manager. And the, what I was thinking about as on the break, I wanted to say, when do taxes ultimately catch up with the investor? And that we kind of got into that early, and I guess I got a little bit ahead of us, but when does the investor ultimately have to pay the piper?
Good point, David. An investor can continually exchange one property for another and continue to defer the gain and taxes all its life, as long as it stays that he or she stays invested in that same type of property. So if somebody's invested in real estate, they can exchange one type of real estate for another or another property and never have the taxes catch up with them. When that taxpayer passes away, their heirs are going to receive a stepped-up basis in the inherited property equal to its fair market value at the time of death. So therefore, they are not inheriting the any built-up gain. They're going to receive a value equal to what it's currently worth. So if they immediately sell that property, there will be no gain to have to pay tax, capital gains taxes on. But when an investor ultimately does or decides to cash out of that type of property, say, for example, real estate, at that point, that is when taxes would catch up and be payable.
Okay, so if you keep rolling it, you keep 1031 exchanging, and you die with it, then we the step up on capital gains, recapture, all that jazz, and then only the estate inheritance tax potentially to deal with.
That's right. No capital gains taxes.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like it. So let's talk about some practical things. What kinds of transactions are you seeing, Jaina, in the marketplace? What are people doing these days?
Well, I covered the southeastern U.S., and we have seen exchanges just exploding in recent years. We are just constantly busy with 1031 exchange activity, much more than past recent years. And we're seeing a wide variety of types of property that people exchange, including residential rentals, some agricultural properties, also commercial and industrial properties. So just a wide variety of properties are being exchanged currently.
You know, with all of the activity in real estate, with residential and people buying it and fixing them up and taking them out of foreclosure and all of that and short sales, any impact there? Are people looking at 1031s for those types of transactions?
We do see short sales and foreclosure acquisitions coming up with 1031 exchange investors, mainly on the acquisition side. So people are looking, trying to get a good deal on their replacement properties. You don't see too many people doing exchanges out of short sales, of course, but we do see them on the purchasing end. The one thing that investors need to consider if they're thinking about buying a replacement property through a short sale is the length of time a lender is going to take to approve the transaction. They want to make sure that they will be able to obtain the required lender approval within the 180-day exchange period.
That's a good point. Well, now that brings us to, I've got a couple more questions to try to get in with you, Jaina, before we run out of time. And there's a couple other ones that are really important. Now, here's another one. What about when you have partnerships, people own the property together, and one wants to do both of them have to do the 1031? Can they kind of go their separate ways and do something different? Or how does that work?
Well, it really depends on how the property is vested, the title to the property. If it's held in a partnership, then the partnership has to complete the exchange and the partnership has to buy the replacement property. But if the property is held as tenants in common, then the individual sellers can decide how they want to proceed. Some can cash out, and some can decide to do an exchange.
Excellent. And here a couple of these are just make sure these are fall in the category. Make sure we get them in before we go. Now, how about this? And this speaks to, I think, the one of the advantages of using the experienced intermediary, a company like yours, to be involved and hold the money in this process, is that is if the investor has identified the replacement property and they want to close on that one, but they haven't sold the property they're replacing yet.
Yes, and that does happen sometimes. Generally, the regulations require that the investor sell first and buy second. But when somebody does need to buy first, a reverse exchange makes that possible.
Hmm.
So a reverse exchange allows the client to comply with that sell first, buy second order in a traditional exchange while satisfying the market requirement to close on replacement property. It's a little bit more involved. It requires that we get on title to their new property until they sell their existing property.
Okay.
We can sit on title for up to 180 days to make the exchange possible.
Interesting. Well, that's actually pretty, I'm going to say, innovative. I think that's pretty slick to be able to do it that way. And I know there's, when you do that, it's a little more moving parts. And so how about this, Jaina? I'm getting all my 1031 questions answered. How about an investor who wants to use the exchange proceeds to build or improve on the replacement property? Can you do that?
You can. And I think it's a really exciting proposition. Say someone is selling their business facility, maybe it's too small to accommodate their needs and they need to build a new facility. You can actually build your new replacement property with deferred 1031 exchange funds, you know, while deferring the taxes on the sale of the current property. So, you know, that's really, it also involves having our company get on title to the new property while it's being, while the improvements are added. But that is a great tool by doing an improvement exchange to allow the client to acquire and build its replacement property all with tax-deferred funds.
And last, just we've got just a little bit of time left here, Jaina. Kind of a closing question or thought for you is what should people look for when they're working with an intermediary? I mean, I know that you've got a lot of good information on your website, and we need to get the website in before you answer that question.
The exchange website for our company is www.firstexchange.com.
Okay.
First is spelled out.
Okay, firstexchange.com. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good. And so qualified intermediary, what makes them qualified?
Well, I encourage people to look for a qualified intermediary that has extensive experience in 1031 exchanges, is financially stable. They want to make sure the company is audited annually and offers a third-party guarantee of their funds. It's wise to ask for an errors and omissions policy and a fidelity bond. And you should also be confident that the security of your funds is looked into. Know how and where the funds are going to be held by the intermediary. And also, investors need to know that their qualified intermediary cannot be considered an agent of theirs. So it can't be their real estate attorney, real estate agent, banker or broker, accountant. So it has to be a non-agent of the taxpayer.
Excellent. Jaina Perrett, ladies and gentlemen, Vice President and Regional Manager of First American Exchange Company. Jaina, we really appreciate you being on the line with us, and we'll talk again.
Thank you, David. I enjoyed it.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.